Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
I'm kind of sad to see this series come to an end after tonight. We've been looking at lifestyle ethics with Simon Kerry-Holt. We have covered everything over the last 6 weeks: houses, cars, the shopping mall, the corporate world, spirituality, everything, as to how we can take a more ethical approach to some of these everyday issues. Not the big ethical things that we normally consider when we talk about the word of ethics, but these little decisions that we make every day. Tonight, we finish with an examination on the ethics of time. Now, if you're one of those people that lives life at 100 miles an hour with no time left for yourself or certainly for others, I think you're going to like what Simon has to say. Then again, maybe you won't, because it'll require change. Simon, hi.
Good to be back, Sheridan.
Really interesting, this whole idea of time. I remember a book that I read by Oz Guinness a little while ago called Prophetic Untimeliness. And he's a sociologist of knowledge, and he writes from a Christian perspective. And he was talking about the invention of the watch. I'd never even thought about this before. And he talked about, I think it was a Filipino group, who actually said that Westerners were these people with these little gods on their wrists.
Yes.
Isn't that telling? We look at our wrists and say, what is this little thing on my wrist, this little watch, telling me to do next? Oh, I must go.
Exactly. Exactly. We have learned to live our lives in reference to time. And whether it's the watch or whether today it's the mobile phone that we carry in our pocket that has the time displayed right on the front, or whatever timepiece it is, we find ourselves increasingly dependent upon it. One of the things that I ask my students to do in one of my classes is to live for a 24-hour period without any personal timepiece on their being, to see how they function, how they fare over a 24-hour period without any reference to a personal timepiece. Now, that means they've either got to ask someone else what time it is, or perhaps they'll look for that the town hall clock, or they need to find other ways of determining what time it is. And often they find that they have their own internal clock. They become so used to living a certain way that that external watch on their wrist has become internalized. So they discover all sorts of things about themselves and about their approach to life and relationships and schedules by just that simple act of taking off the watch, placing it in the drawer, and seeing how they fare.
What is the ultimate purpose of that particular exercise? What are you trying to get them to do? Obviously, that's what they're discovering, that there's different ways.
I'm wanting them to think about their relationship to time and how much that their daily lives are structured around schedules and busyness and appointments, how much we have become dependent on a very structured, linear sense of time. And what impact is that having upon who we are and upon how we function in relationships with others? It's not demonizing the watch. I happen not to wear one, but I do have a mobile phone that has a timepiece on it. It's not demonizing it. It's simply saying, let's remove that for a period of time and see what life feels like.
One of your academic articles, you quote Mr. Curley, that famous Lunig character, and somebody asks him, what is worth doing and what is worth having? And Mr. Curley replies, it is worth doing nothing and having a rest.
It is worth doing nothing and having a rest. It's interesting, isn't it, when we think about the word rest, sometimes we immediately think too of the word sloth, of laziness. Busyness has become a mark of importance. You know, I have more appointments in my diary than you have in yours, so therefore I must be more important than you are. I have more people who are needing my time, and so therefore I must be a person of greater worth than you are. Mr. Curley is suggesting, in a sense, in his own wonderful way, that there is something deeply virtuous about rest, about stopping, ceasing, and resting. And certainly, from a theological perspective, we would want to say that's true.
We actually have a God who created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh.
That's right.
And said, you do likewise.
Exactly. We are called to rest. We are called to rest. If you look at two of the great theological themes in the Bible, firstly, the theme of creation. As you have said, God himself said, enough is enough. I have done sufficient. And now it's time to pull back and, in a sense, take time to look at the beauty of what I have created, to drink it in and to be able to say,
it is good. Yes,
it is good. and then you go on to think about the whole notion of salvation. Now, Jesus says to me, "All you who are weary and burdened, come to me, and I will give you rest." Mm. Or a lovely Aramaic version which says, "Come to me, and I will Sabbath you. Mm-hmm. I will rest you." That sense of God calling us into a deep place of rest, so that in our salvation is that end to striving and trying and wrestling and going and getting, and that sense of let's just rest in the wonderful fact that I am a created being of God and have an opportunity to say, it is good.
Open House right across Australia. We're continuing our Lifestyle Ethics series with Simon Carey-Holt. We're talking about the ethics of time tonight. We're calling this one Life on the Run. How have we gotten this far? How have we gotten to the stage where it is considered a mark of importance to be busy?
Yes, how have we gotten there? Gosh, I don't know, Sharon. I think
it's the first time you said that during this series.
All the things that we've talked about up to this point really come together in this conversation. There are so many aspects of our lives that generate activity, that generate busyness. Whether it's our bent to consume and therefore we need to earn more and work harder, you know, whether it's that aspiration for the bigger house and so we have to work harder and we have to do more and we have to dream more intensely, whether it's connected to our whole notion of providing for our family, whether it's our esteem that comes from our work, all of these things come together, creating a lifestyle that is just, for many of us, is just overwhelmingly busy. Mm. My wife and I have just two children, and we often reflect on the fact that we both work, and life is full. You know, trying to be parents to two children, and yet my mother had six children, and my wife, I remember saying to my mother once, you know, how in the world did you do it? Mm. And my mother's response was beautifully pastoral. She said, "But dear, that's all I had to be. Mm. I didn't have to be anything else.
All I was meant to be
was a mother."
It's an identity thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Huh. And so, in a sense, that you come back to that sense that all of these things come together to create a lifestyle of busyness. And it almost gets to that point, doesn't it, where we get addicted to the adrenaline that comes from that lifestyle. And so when that one day a week does roll around where we can do nothing but lay on the couch, we don't lay on the couch. We have six projects on the go, or we have 16 friendships that we need to go and nurture. Or we're constantly living on a schedule. We're constantly living on the run in a way that we have not done in past generations.
Yeah. Well, we feel guilty when we do lie on the couch. What are we losing? What are we missing out on? What are we lacking?
We're lacking a sense of self, I reckon, as I think about the busyness of my own life. And certainly there are periods in my own life where, despite the fact that I've thought much about these things, I find that life kind of swirls around me and I'm gathered up in this busyness. And in those busy periods, I lose any sense of myself. I lose that time to think. I lose that time to reflect. Mm. Stephen Bertram written a wonderful book called Hyperculture. And he's not writing from any particular religious perspective, but he talks about the fact that we are immersed in a culture which is running at such a rapid rate that we no longer have the opportunity to reflect back on what happened yesterday or to envision what might happen tomorrow because of the power of right now. Mm. I am absolutely consumed in everything that's got to be done and achieved today that I simply don't have the leisure or the opportunity to recall what happened yesterday or to think strategically or openly about what's going to happen tomorrow. I am captivated by now. Hmm. And that, to me, just runs completely counter to what Sabbath is about.
Yes. Let's talk about that, Sabbath. This whole idea of God resting on the seventh day and basically saying you do likewise. And I'm sure that the God of unlimited resources and energy certainly didn't need to rest, but was setting us a bit of an example. What is a Sabbath? And how deep does that word go? Is it just a day off, just a holiday, just a break?
No, it's about peace. It's about shalom. It's about uh, It's about that deep peace actually seeping into our being and becoming part of who we are. So that's, in a sense, it's much more than one day in seven. I don't know about you, but I grew up in a religious home where we religiously held certain rules around the Sabbath. You know, we weren't allowed to polish our shoes on a Sunday. Oh, yeah. There's a whole list of things that you shouldn't do on the Sabbath because that is a day of rest. Now I would want, in a sense, to distance myself from that legalism. And yet there is something about that conscious choice to set time aside to just be that is of deep value. And unless we choose it intentionally, it probably ain't going to happen. Mm. We have to be very intentional about choosing slowliness. Hmm. We have to be incredibly intentional about saying no. Today or this week or while I'm on vacation, I will live differently.
How do we do that? How do we divest ourselves of that hyperculture when we are so used to it?
It again comes back to those, this is all about ethics, so it's all about choices. It comes back to those choices that we make in our daily lives. We do have choice. There are some people who say, well, my life is busy, it's outside of my control. Yeah. The minute we surrender control, then we're on a fast track to nowhere. Every one of us has the ability to choose within our daily lives. Things that we can choose for and against in order to live a life that is much more a reflection of God's intentions. I sat in a meeting some years ago of local ministers of churches. I was in a new housing estate where I was planting a church, and the group of 12 or so ministers gets together once a month, and we would, as ministers do, share their war stories of the ministry, you know. Mm. And we go around the room and every person talking about how busy they are for Jesus, you know. Mm. And we went story after story and finally got to the man who won the prize for the day. And he said that he had not been at home with his family for 41 consecutive nights.
Oh, dear.
Now, I look back at that and I think that is just crazy. That is dangerous. But at the time, I think we all sat around the room and kind of draw a breath and, what a wonderful disciple.
Right.
Sold his life out for Jesus. And yet he had got this family back home who hasn't seen him for 41 consecutive nights. So the well-being of his own family, the well-being of his own self, the well-being of his own community and relationships, all of these things, that man in ministry has a choice. We have to own that fact, that we make choices in our daily lives. So what are some of the choices, Sheridan, that I make in my life? Well, they're very small choices in a sense. But for me, I choose to not answer the phone when we're having dinner together. Mm-hmm. Now, that's probably a choice that many other families make too. It's a good choice. Being able to say that I am with my family at this table for this hour, and no one else will interrupt that time. Hmm. I'll call them back. They can leave a message.
Can I go a step further and say even the fact that you and your family are having dinner together at the same table
is actually thing.
It's another choice as well, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. I can choose, as I do, to say I will answer emails once a day. Now, there are those who might say, oh, can't do that, you know. And perhaps you in your work situation or you in your home situation can't make that choice, but I can. And I can say that once a day I will answer emails because I will not live enslaved to the computer screen. There are other people, there are other needs, there are other relationships that are worth nurturing. I can say that every Wednesday morning on my way to work that I will stop at a local cafe and I will take 2 hours to do nothing but read. Mm-hmm. Every week. Sacrosanct. Mm-hmm. Me choosing. Now, I could get myself to work at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning, and I could see a dozen reasons why taking those 2 hours to read on a Wednesday morning may not be such a good idea. There are just so many things that have to be done.
Yeah.
But there will always be so many things that have to be done. How am I feeding my spirit? How am I building into my life those places where I can reflect back and reflect forward and not be conquered by the power of now? Mm. So multiple small choices that we can make in our lives, apart from that very basic one of saying one day in seven, mm-hmm. I will rest, multiple choices that we can make about the way that we will live our lives in order to develop that holy slowliness in our lives.
Yes, almost little Sabbaths within every day.
Absolutely.
Simon, this is now the end.
That's sad.
It is very sad. It's been wonderful to have you along.
It's been wonderful to be here, Sharon. And I really appreciate the opportunity.
Well, you've been, I think, a help to so many of us. So appreciate your time again.
Thank you.
Simon Carey-Holt, who has been our guest and our guide, really, on this lifestyle ethics course. Now, remember, it's all online if you've missed any of the series. Theopenhouse.net.au will get you to it. Simon's the author of God Next Door, very, very good book. Lecturer at Melbourne's Whitley College as well. And I'm sure we'll have you back again at some stage.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.